Taylor to come forward and speak to us upon the flying roll and the EFAR.
Thus far, my dear brethren and sisters, we have come, haven't we, to things of glory and of hope. But now, Zechariah turns, doesn't he? Now, my dear brethren and sisters, reminded that before the glory, before the hope can be realised, there must be sadness amongst Yahweh's servants. Because some, my dear brethren and sisters, as we know, have transgressed his law. And so the record says, then I turned. Here, my dear brethren and sisters, with a change of emphasis. Not before, in our considerations, had he turned away from the things of glory and of hope. Had followed progression in that manifestation of Yahweh in his multitudinous people. And what the Hebrew there means is to turn back. Not to return, but to turn away. What had he seen so far? He'd seen glory, hadn't he? Salvation and light. But now he looks back in time a little, to the time before Yahweh is revealed, and he looks back upon the earth, to when that time when the apostasy seems to be in control. He looks at the present, our present. He looks at his day when he saw the transgression against Yahweh's law. He looks to that time before God is manifest upon the earth, as we've said. And at such a time, these faithful do, don't they, sorrow with anguish of heart when they consider the state of the truth. And it's fitting, therefore, isn't it, that we come to the sixth vision. It's a vision of man, if you like. It's a vision of the degrading influence that man places upon those holy things that Yahweh has placed with us. And so he turns away from now from those things of glory. And as he turns away, he lifts his eyes. And he's reminded, isn't he? And we are reminded also that, as we said yesterday evening, whatever the troubles, whatever the joys, whatever the anguishes that we may face, we must lift up our eyes, for redemption draweth nigh. And so he does. And what does he see? He sees a flying roll. And whatever was written upon this roll, its matter would not be restricted to the place of its origin. It was to leave that place. It was to leave the land. It was to leave the place of glory. It was to leave, my dear brethren and sisters, the temple which the faithful brethren had been rebuilding. And it was to go away. It was to follow the apostates. It was to take the apostates wherever they might be found. And so we read in verse 3, then said he unto me, this is the curse that goeth forth over the face of the whole earth. For every one that stealeth shall be cut off, as on this side according to it, and every one that sweareth shall be cut off, as on that side according to it. Yes, the curse wouldn't be restricted, would it? It would follow the polluters and the apostatizers of truth. And we're reminded, aren't we, brethren and sisters, that if we do apostatize Yahweh's truth, we cannot run away from it. The curse will follow us wherever we might go. Just remind ourselves of the words of Psalm 139, shall we? Psalm 139, verse 7. Whither shall I go from thy spirit, or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend up into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in hell, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost part of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, even the night shall be light about me. Yea, the darkness hideth not from thee, but the night shineth as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike to thee. We cannot run away, can we, brethren and sisters, from the truth, from the hope? And if we transgress, well, we will suffer for it. We can never run away. We remember, don't we, in Genesis chapter 3, this is good to go back to the beginnings. We remember that Adam tried that very thing, to run away when he had transgressed. Verse 8, and they heard the voice of Yahweh Elohim walking in the garden in the cool of the day. And Adam and his wife hid themselves from the presence of Yahweh Elohim amongst the trees of the garden. He tried to run away. They hid themselves. But Yahweh Elohim called in verse 9. Chapter 4. Verse 14. Cain tried to do the same thing. But he realizes that everyone that findeth me shall slay me. And the transgressors against God's law never learn. They try to run away, but it is to no avail, because the scroll shall follow them. Jeremiah chapter 23 and verse 24. Am I a God at hand, saith Yahweh, but not a God afar off? He is near and yet he is far. There can never be a time when he is not seen. And so we go back to our chapter. We go back now to the fifth chapter of the book of the prophet Zechariah. And we look at some more details concerning this role which spoke to them of a curse. And he said unto me, verse 2, what seest thou? And Zechariah answered, I see a flying roll. A roll which was to speak of the curse that was to be the due desert of the wicked ones in question. And we find that its measurements were 20 cubits, and the breadth thereof 10 cubits. And that's interesting, isn't it, brethren and sisters? Because there was Zechariah and the co-workers rebuilding the temple, rebuilding the ecclesia, rebuilding the holy place. And there he sees in vision, leaving him, a scroll that is 20 cubits by 10. It was the size of the holy place. And the place of the ministration of the faithful servants of Yahweh was leaving the land, brethren and sisters. And it had a curse written across it, because that holy place had cursed the people because of their transgression. Of course, it's not literal, is it? Never could be. Although the holy place, the tabernacle itself, was not a very large building, to see one the size of a holy place fly through the sky is an amazing sight. And what should have been in that holy place, brethren and sisters? What was in the holy place in the ministrations of the Levites? We see in it the lampstand, don't we? And in that lampstand we see the only source of light amidst gross darkness. Brother Alan spoke to us this morning concerning the lampstands. And he showed us indeed, my dear brethren and sisters, that they speak of the light of Yahweh's truth. What else do we see? We see there a table of showbread. And upon the gold-covered table of shittim wood stood 12 loaves of showbread. 12 loaves which represent to us the Israel of God. And they were consumed upon the Sabbath. And what were they made? It was a combination, wasn't it? It was a mixture of flour, of the corn of the earth, the works, and on the other hand, oil, the word of spirit. And there we see works impregnated with truth. They're inseparable, my dear brethren and sisters. They speak to us, therefore, of a time when the great high priest would absorb his family into himself at the end of man's dominion. And that's not all, because there was also an altar of incense that spoke of acceptable prayer. And these three principles of light, of sustenance, and prayer are conditions upon which life is manifest. They are things which are seen in the man of the one true spirit, aren't they? Who shall arise to proclaim Yahweh's curse upon a faithless community. And they, in effect, as a faithful man like Zechariah would look upon that scroll, and he would know to recognise the size of that, and seeing at the most holy place, he would see also there that these things were condemnation upon the people. Verse 3. Zechariah chapter 5. Then said he unto me, this is the curse that goeth forth over the face of the whole earth. For every one that stealeth shall be cut off, as on this side according to it, and every one that sweareth shall be cut off, as on that side according to it. Every one that stealeth. We're not talking, are we, about common criminals here? Such things are evident. It is the mere word that means to thieve, but by implication to deceive. We're talking of the things of deception. And Israel had vowed, hadn't they, to conform unto the divine ideals, but they'd deceived the Father. No doubt they'd deceived themselves also. And the very truth had been evidenced before them. The leaders had stolen and hidden his unsavoury words, the unsavoury words of Yahweh's truth. He'd kept them from the nation. But you know, my dear brethren and sisters, such deception can never last. Shall we remind ourselves, we know it well, of the words of Ezekiel chapter 21. Ezekiel 21 and verse 21. For the king of Babylon stood at the parting of the way, at the head of the two ways to use divination. He made his arrows bright, he consulted with images, he looked in the liver. His right hand was the divination for Jerusalem, to appoint captains, to open the mouth in the slaughter, to lift up the voice with shouting, to appoint battering rams against the gates, to cast them out and to build a fort, and it shall be unto them as a false divination in their sight, to them that have sworn oaths, but who will call to remembrance the iniquity that they may be taken. The iniquity was to be remembered, wasn't it? We read of that in verse 24. And the transgressions discovered, that in all your doings your sins do appear. And so that we come to a situation in verse 32 that thou shalt be no more remembered, because they had stolen from Yahweh. Thou, or rather, back in chapter 5 of Zechariah and verse 3, and everyone that sweareth, everyone that maketh a declaration, an irreversible oath, the root of the seven. We looked at the sevens quite a lot already, haven't we? Its basis, as we've seen, is that of perfection of infinity. It's irrefutable. And it is the intention of Yahweh to abide by the oath. But man has failed. Israel had failed. And so we pick up the record now in verse 4. I will bring it forth. saith Yahweh of armies, and it shall enter into the house of the thief, and into the house of him that sweareth falsely by my name, and it shall remain in the midst of his house, and it shall consume it with the timber thereof, and the stones thereof. Yet Israel hath sworn that it was false. Where do we stand? And this roll, which bears the curse, where does it go? It goes into the house of the thief. Remember in Haggai chapter 1 that they had sworn to build, yet they had stolen from Yahweh in failing to do so. And there comes this great scroll straight into the homes, brethren and sisters. That law was now staring them in the face. That house was to be consumed through the presence of the curse. It shall remain in the midst of his house, and it shall consume it with the timber thereof and the stones thereof. It was a leprous house. Leviticus 14 and verse 44. Then the priest shall come and look. Verse 44. And behold, if the plague be spread in the house, it is a fretting leprosy in the house, it is unclean. And he shall break down the house, the stones of it, and the timber thereof, and all the mortar of the house, and he shall carry them forth out of the city into an unclean place. The house is to be destroyed. And so it was, wasn't it, brethren and sisters? And so, as we quoted yesterday, the words of the Master, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, thou that killest the prophets, and stonest them that are sent unto thee, how often would I have gathered thee unto me, and ye would not? But this goes much further, my dear brethren and sisters, than Israel. It speaks of Catholicism, as we hope to see shortly. And there was the house of Israel. It was taken by Babylon and later by Rome. How was it taken? When was it taken? Where was it taken, brethren and sisters? What would next happen? Well, let's have a look. Chapter 5, Zechariah. We're introduced to something new now in verse 5. Then the angel that talked with me went forth and said unto me, Lift up now thine eyes and see what is this that goeth forth. And what does he see? Verse 6, I said, What is it? And he said, This is an ephah. And there we have an ephah depicted there, in the bottom corner over there. It's a measure, brethren and sisters. It's a measure of grain. A measure of grain that was to be filled. With iniquity. This is their resemblance, it says, to all the earth. This is their eye. That's what the word means. This is their resemblance. This is their eye. And we showed before, didn't we, earlier on in the day, that the eye speaks to us of the mind, and as such of the character and the movement and the whole motivation of the body. And this is the resemblance of Israel. It's an ether. That goeth forth. The eye of the transgressors was directly associated, brethren and sisters, with the ephah. The mind now was concerned with the sustenance of the flesh. Israel in the day of Christ had done that, hadn't it? Shall we have a look? Matthew chapter 6 and verse 19. Therefore, Herodias had a quarrel against him and would have killed him, but she would not. Sorry, brothers and sisters. Sorry. Matthew 6, verse 19. Lay not up for your treasures, yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust are corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. Don't do that, brethren and sisters, it says. but lay up for yourself treasures in heaven. But Israel did not, did they? For where your treasure, verse 21, is there will your heart be also. And there it was, brethren and sisters, in the satisfaction of flesh. And so verse 23 says, how great is that darkness? Therefore, verse 31, take no thought, saying, what shall we eat? Or what shall we drink? Or wherewithal shall we be clothed? These things do the Gentiles seek. Now that's very significant, as we hope to show. But this was Israel, wasn't it? This was the covenant people. But it was Israel, but they did not look with an Israelitish eye. They looked with the mind of the Gentile. And if they had the mind of the Gentile, a Gentile they would be. Let's have a look, shall we? Zechariah 5. And verse 7. And behold, there was lifted up a talent of lead. And this is a woman that sitteth in the midst of Ephah. Now that word lead is a general term for metal. It's unpurified. It's heavy. It's just been dug out of the earth. It's no purification at all. It's of the earth, earthy, and of that form it shall remain. What a contrast. Remember, the scroll which was a curse upon the people, that scroll spoke to them in a way of the things of purity and of life, but not this ephah, not this lead. It was literally of the earth. Remember the ark, don't we? That too had a lid, but that was a pure gold. And we're told that this is a woman that sitteth in the midst of the ephah. It's a woman, brethren and sisters. It cannot speak of the ecclesia, can it? Not now. The ecclesia is a virgin. It is that woman that is pure, that is overtaken with chastity, that concentrates its things on its mind on truth. The ecclesia is a virgin, but not the world, not the apostasy. It's a woman that has intoxicated itself with the harlotry of the apostasy. Would we have here Babylon in Israel? We would indeed. But how? Had not Judah spent 70 years in the land, in that land, in Babylon? It had indeed. And the Babylonian eye and thought had made inroads into Israel, into the people of the name. Just think for one moment, what did we see in Babylon? When Israel was there, there was wealth. There was ecclesiastical commercialism. There was a trading of the souls of men. There was state religion. That was the influence, the land of Babylon. And they brought it back with them. The influence had come back. Yes, they were faithful as a return, but nevertheless, the influence was there and it had come returned with them. Because later, they transgressed. Matthew chapter 21. And verse 12. And Jesus went into the temple of God and cast out all them that sold and bought in the temple, and overthrew the tables of the money changers and the seats of them that sold doves. They sold and bought, as they had done in Babylon. They overthrew the tables of the money changers. They sold doves, verse 13, and said unto them, it is written, my house shall be called the house of prayer, but ye have made it a den of thieves. Interesting connection with the earlier in our chapter, isn't it? And what does the record say concerning this woman? This woman now that's got this influence from Babylon, it says that she sitteth in the midst of the ephah. Verse 8, this is wickedness. This enforcement of man's interpretation of law, linked together with a commercialized religion, brethren and sisters, as we saw in the nation in the time of Christ, is wickedness. Interestingly, that's a feminine word. And here we see now the merging, don't we, between Babylonian philosophy and Judaistic priesthood. And actually, you'll notice, no doubt many of you are aware, but the writings of Brother Thomas point that out, that the Roman apostasy is indeed a mixture of paganism and Levitical apostasy. And Paul seems to make reference to that in 2 Thessalonians in chapter 2. Second Thessalonians chapter 2 and at verse 3. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposeth and exalteth himself above all that is called God, all that is worshipped, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. We see that today, don't we? We know that speaks of the harlot system of Rome. But where did it come from? Verse 7. The mystery of iniquity doth already work. Only he who now letteth will let until he be taken out of the way. And when shall that wicked be revealed, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming? From where did this one who opposed Yahweh come? He came from the covenant people, didn't he? And the beginning of that influence is starting to have its effects now. But through the work of Christ, it was a little subdued. For it was they who revealed that the woman of wickedness, for what she was Babylonian. And so through the work of the prophets and of the apostles, we find now in Zechariah chapter 5 and at verse 8, that he cast it, that is her, in the original, into the midst of the ephah, and he cast the weight of lead upon the mouth thereof. So the lid on the chart there was cast on the top. She was sealed, brethren and sisters. No longer now would that faithless generation make an influence on the ecclesia of God, for it was effectively sealed in a coffin. Was the apostasy in Judah. When? We spoke yesterday, didn't we, of Israel being prostrate upon the ground. And so, Matthew chapter 24. And at verse 24. There shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. That was their endeavour, brethren and sisters, that they might destroy the elect. Verse 28. For wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. And although the body politic of Israel may now be dead, now it might be concealed within that coffin, the Jewish hierarchical priesthood and Jewish commercialism were not. Not at all. Verse 9, Zechariah 5. For behold, then I lifted up mine eyes and looked, and behold, there came out two women. And the wind was in their wings, for they had wings like the wings of a stork, and they lifted up the ephah between the earth and the heaven. So now this ephah, with this woman within it, is to be lifted from the earth, with the aid of two women. A woman again suggests to us the apostasy, doesn't it? But there's a twofold manifestation of it now. And so, in Jeremiah chapter 3, and at verse 6, what do we find? Verse 6, Yahweh all said also unto me, in the days of Josiah the king, hast thou seen that which backsliding Israel have done? She's gone up from every high mountain and under every green tree, and there hath played the harlots. Immorality was rife. It was intoxicated with the doctrine of the nations. And verse 7, and I said after she had done all these things, turn thou unto me, but she returned not. The appeal had gone out, but she rebelled. And verse 8, I saw when for all the causes whereby backsliding Israel committed adultery, I had put her away and given her a bill of divorce. Yet her treacherous sister Judah feared not, but went and played the harlot also. So Israel transgressed and Judah followed her. And these two women, these two adulteresses. And Ezekiel talks to us of two women, doesn't he, in chapter 23. Chapter 23 and at verse 2, Son of man, there were two women, the daughters of one mother. Verse 3, and they committed whoredoms in Egypt. They committed whoredoms in their youth. There were their breasts pressed. There they bruised the teats of their virginity. And the names of them were Ahola the elder and Aholibah her sister. And they were mine. And they bare sons and daughters. Thus were their names. Samaria is Ahola and Jerusalem Aholibah. Israel and Judah. Verse 5, Ahola played the harlot when she was mine, says Yahweh. And as far as Ahola is concerned, well, verse 12, she doted upon the Assyrians, her neighbours, captains and rulers, clothed most gorgeously, horsemen riding upon horses, all of them desirable young men. They looked to the world, brethren and sisters, did Ahola and Aholibah. And the judgment that would come upon them, what was it? Verse 46. For thus saith Adonai Yahweh, I will bring up a company upon them, and will give them to be removed and spoiled. I will bring a company, he says. It shall come, they will come. And verse 48, thus will I cause lewdness to cease out of the land, that all women may be taught not to do after your lewdness. And so the ephah was taken. It was taken away, wasn't it? With wickedness within it. Away from the land. And we go back to our chapter and we find that the wind was in their wings. The wings, therefore, were driven by a wind. And a wind speaks to us of judgment. We know that the ships of Tarshish shall be destroyed by an east wind. Have a look, shall we? Jeremiah chapter 51. And at verse 1, thus saith Yahweh, behold, I will raise up against Babylon and against them that dwell in the midst of them, that rise up against me, a destroying wind. Yes, so it speaks to us of judgment. And what of those wings that we read there? Well, they were wings like the wings of a stork. Now, that was an abomination. Leviticus 11. A stork was an unclean animal. It was an abomination, as we say, in the sight of the Father. Leviticus 11 and verse 9. And these shall ye eat of all that are in the waters. Whatsoever hath fins and scales in the waters, in the seas and in the rivers, them shall ye eat. Verse 19. And the stork, the heron after her kind, and the lapwing, and the bat. All fowls that creep, going upon all four, shall be an abomination unto you. And so a stork was an abomination to the Father. And what did it do? Where did it rest? Where did it nest, my dear brethren and sisters? It nested in the ruins. And where does it go? Where does it fly? Where does it migrate to? It migrates to Europe. That's interesting, because Israel was to be taken, wasn't it? That carcass was to be taken away. It was to be taken away by the Roman legions, those whose roots are in Europe. But if we also look at the Hebrew root of the word, it speaks to us of piety, religious piety. So those wings, therefore, were the wings of a stork, were then to lift up that ephah and take it by that wind to Rome. So, just pick up the threads a little bit. Remember that this ephah now is lifted up. There's a woman in it, which has Babylonian thinking. There's two women that speak to us of apostate Israel and Judah. And so what do we see? Together we see apostate Israel bearing Babylonian thought throughout the world. And it was the Judaizers in the first century who were responsible for the Catholic hierarchy as we know it today. Shall we go back to Thessalonians? 2 Thessalonians, and at chapter 2. And at verse 7. For the mystery of iniquity doth already work. Yes, brethren and sisters. And who were those workers of iniquity? Well, they were the Judaizers, weren't they? And if we need any doubts at all, as the scriptures abound with evidence for that. But let us turn now to Acts chapter 15. And here are the beginnings, aren't they, of this apostasy. And certain men, verse 1, which came down from Judea, taught the brethren and said, except ye be circumcised after the manner of Moses, ye cannot be saved. They were trying to introduce their brand of Levitical order. They were trying, my dear brethren and sisters, to introduce the hierarchy, as they saw it, into apostasy. And so when AD 70 came, Israel, bearing Babylon, was swept away, and those traditions of Jewry, although varied, were taken up by the church. And what do we see now? And what do we see now, my dear brothers and sisters, in Rome? We see commercialism. We see a select priesthood. We see an inner sanctuary. We see tithes. We see holy days and feasts. We see Judaism in Rome. That's what we see. And we find, if we go back to our chapter in Zechariah chapter 5, that they were lifted up, that ephah was lifted up between the earth and heaven. And the papacy was to encompass all within its grasp, both rich and poor, both the political powers and those of the earth also. And verse 10, where would it go? Then said I to the angel that talked with me, whither do these bear the ether? Well, remember, it migrates to Europe. Verse 11. And he said unto me, to build it an house in the land of Shinar. In the land of Shinar. That they, the Judaizers, might build it an house Remember the scroll? With the curse upon it, it would go into the house. Now, Revelation 16. 16th chapter of the Apocalypse and verse 13. And I saw three unclean spirits like frogs come out of the mouth of the dragon and out of the mouth of the beast and out of the mouth of the false prophet. What do we see, brethren and sisters? We see three unclean spirits like frogs coming out of the inner sanctum of Levitical Judaism as manifesting Catholicism. And there, my dear brethren and sisters, what the world calls St. Peter's Basilica, where the people cannot approach the inner sanctum, but wait the son of perdition to appear on the balcony that they might bow to him. Now, brethren and sisters, Zechariah chapter 5 tells us exactly where it went to build a house in the land of Shinar. Now, Shinar is the land of the enemies to it. Daniel chapter 7 and verse 7. We've been there before, haven't we? And after this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it, and it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. Yes, brethren and sisters, there are 10 horns. And as we remember from yesterday, out of those 10 horns came the little horn that had eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth speaking great things. It was, my dear brethren and sisters, the land of Shinar. And the record tells us in Zechariah that it shall, or she shall, be established there upon her own base. There is the land of the enemies to us. And she, that is this this apostate form of Judaism, shall be taken. And remember, don't we, the principles in the 17th chapter of the Apocalypse. And at verse 3. So he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, away from the land. And I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet coloured beast, full of names of blasphemy, having 7 heads and 10 horns. There's your woman. It's now manifest as Roman, no longer as Israelitish. Verse 4. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet colour, and decked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand, full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. And upon her forehead was a name written: Mystery, Babylon, the Great, the Mother of Harlots, Ahola and Aholibah. And abominations, the stalk, if you like, of the earth. What a shame, brethren and sisters. How saddening to us who love the truth. All because Israel lost sight of the principles which the law taught. Hebrews chapter 3. It's an old principle, isn't it? It's a principle that applied to Israel in the wilderness journeyings. It applied to Israel in the time of the Assyrian, and to Judah in the time of the Babylonian. It applied to Judea in the time of the Master. And it could also apply to us. So we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief. Let us therefore fear, lest the promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of us should seem to come short of it. But we know, as sad as that is, we know, my dear brethren and sisters, that all shall be remedied. We know that Yahweh through his Son shall return and shall be manifest in the multitude of mighty ones. and let us remain faithful. May we look and long and pray for the manifestation of the One. And so, my dear brethren and sisters, may each one of us long indeed to have a part in that glory which is to come.